All right, so in today's episode, we're going to be covering Vincent van Gogh. And just to address the pronunciation as well, we're American, we're living in the US, so we're going to be pronouncing his name Vincent van Gogh. And I know that's a little controversial in the art world as far as pronunciation goes, but just for the sake of ease and so that we're not butchering his name constantly through this episode, we're going to be sticking with the US American pronunciation, phonetic pronunciation.
As we get started digging into Vincent's story and some of the mysteries clouding the details, we want to welcome you to the Whispering Gallery. Emily and I have been digging into the mysterious and sometimes worrisome stories surrounding one of the most famous painters of the Impressionism period, Vincent van Gogh. Vincent was born in the Netherlands, where he was taught art at home by his mother. Later, he attended formal art training, and as a young man, his most sincere wish was to become a preacher, but with time, he chose to focus instead on his art. Vincent moved all over Europe, from Paris, France, to London, England, the Netherlands, and many other places, which we'll talk about further. I think it was Theo who had called Vincent's mood shifts storms when writing to his sister while he and Vincent were roommates in Paris. During this time, it became clear that Vincent would often experience two distinct states, the difficult one being called storms. The commonly known stories are like the low-hanging fruit people can make jabs at or find amusing. When you think about this as being a man's life, about not pointing fingers and making snap judgments, and you dig past the surface, it's more complicated. And some of the stories may not be what they seem. So please stay with us and join us as we find out more about Vincent Storms, his history, his paintings, his love of yellow, and the halos he would sometimes paint around things like in the sky of the Starry Night painting. We'll introduce hypotheses about the mixes of physical and mental health and explore extenuating circumstances that ratcheted things up, like the anise-flavored spirit called absinthe, his kindness and maybe sensitivity and understanding for how it would be if he was in someone else's shoes, without the attitude of, it sucks to suck, as many might dish out, but instead, feeling compassion. It's food for thought.
Okay, so here we go. He lived from 1853 to 1890 and died at the age of 37. And I'm not sure what to say about all of these European names because he moved all over in Europe. He lived 10 places in the Netherlands, 4 places in England, 4 places in France, and 6 in Belgium. And sometimes he'd be moving within the same city. So one of the articles I read had called it his nomadic life, you know, that he just, not to mention traveling and visiting Theo, or I had, in one of the books they pronounced his name Theo, mm-hmm. And I looked it up on Google Translate, and they were saying Dio, so I'm not sure that I could count on Google Translate to help me pronounce the names of things in Dutch, or I'm sure a lot of it is accurate, we've used them before.
It's a lot of different like pronunciations though. So I think just like if we just take our best like phonetic shot and, you know, with the disclaimer at the beginning, hopefully that'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, I have these broken out by the Netherlands, England, France, and Belgium. I don't know if you want me to read them off that way or if I should just, it can come up in his timeline as we're talking about his life.
Do you just want to run through like a general timeline?
Yeah, that's what you had first. Okay. In 1853, Vincent van Gogh was born in Groot Zundert in the Netherlands. As a child, he studied at home. As far as art goes, in his first initial introduction to it, he studied at home with his mother, who painted watercolors. His earliest drawing is dated February 8th of 1864, and it's of a barn and farmhouse. And while people may think of Vincent's art as very loose and flowing and intense, it does seem, if you look up his drawings and other works, he is able to do a fine rendering, and it's not always impressionistic. While he was an impressionistic artist, he did have training, and we'll get into that later. In 1864, he moved to Zevenberg to attend a boys' school. In 1866, he went to Tilburg. That was in the Netherlands as well, and lives with another family while he was attending high school. So already he's beginning to move around a lot while he's young. In 1868, he moved to Groot-Zundert, Netherlands, where he lives with his family. And 1869, he went to The Hague, where he worked as a junior apprentice for Goupil and Clay, and they were art dealers. In 1873, he moved to London, England, working for the same company. And in the same year, he moved to Brixton, England. In 1874, he moved to London, England. In the same year, he moved on to Paris, France. 1875 was London, England again. May of that year, he moved on to Paris, France. And in 1876, he moved on to Etten, Netherlands. This was when he was fired from Goupil and Clay, and he went to live with his family in their new home. I believe it was a parsonage. In 1876, in April, he moved to Ramsgate, England. And in June of that year, he went to Isleworth, England. And by November 19th, he is teaching Sunday school and preaching. And during this time, he had been studying to do this, and it was his great passion. And you know how he was lit up about art. He was just as lit up about becoming a preacher and mm-hmm. studying. And I believe he studied Latin and Greek. And so he was a well-educated guy, you know, as far as the languages he could speak. And there were some conditions they said that he may have had about his letter writing that we'll get into later. So in January of 1877, he moved to Dordrecht in the Netherlands. And he worked as a general assistant for the Bluis and Van Bram bookshop. In May of that year, in Amsterdam, he preps for his theological studies. In 1878, he moves to Laeken, Belgium, as a trial for 3 months, where he works on evangelist training, and while he's there, he stays with an evangelist. In December of 1878, he moved to Paturages, Borangy, Belgium. This poor guy, picking up and hauling around all the time, man, that's got to be hard. In December, he moved in with a farmer in Belgium, and let's see. Then he stays with an evangelist minor, and I believe that's when he worked with preaching to the minors. And he lived kind of in the same situations that the minors lived. He left the room that he was staying in and lived as the minors did and taught them. Let's see, it looks like he stayed in Belgium. He was in Brussels in 1880. In 81, he went back to the Netherlands in The Hague. And he left after a huge argument with his father. And so he rents a room in 82 in The Hague. And then he moves again in September and stays in the Netherlands, just another city, Haarlem in Drenthe. Okay, in 1883, we have him in New Amsterdam and then Nieuwenbin. And let's see, Antwerp, Belgium in 1885. He changes countries and he takes lessons at the Antwerp Academy of Art, where he studies figure painting and drawing from plaster casts. In 1886, he moves to France and lives in a small apartment with Theo. Also, in one of the books I read, they pronounced his name Theo. In June in Paris, they moved to a larger apartment. In 1888, he moves to France, Arles, where he has a studio. And in May of that year, he signs the lease for the Yellow House. And this is the house that he stays at with Gauguin. Let's see, in May he has a temporary room and then moves on in September into the Yellow House. In October, Gauguin moves in, and by December he's in the hospital in Arles. In December, same month, Gauguin departs for Paris. in 89, same city. He returns to the Yellow House from the hospital. This is kind of a lot of moving around right towards the end, but within the same country, I believe. In February of 89, he goes back to the hospital after a second attack. And I believe this is of his related to his health and mental issues that were going on that all seemed kind of tied together. In February, late February, he was confined to the hospital based on a citizen's petition against him. In April, there was flooding at the Yellow House, and in May, he crated up a bunch of paintings and sent them to Theo. In May, he admits himself to the Saint-Rémy de Provence in France, and that's the asylum of Saint-Paul de Massol. In 89, he visits Arles, France, and returns to the asylum. During this time, he painted the Pietà after Delacroix during September. In February of 1890, he visits Arles, France. He returns to Saint-Rémy and returns to the asylum. In May, he is discharged and goes to Paris, France, then Évreux-sur-Oise, France, and in July 1890, he passes away. We haven't gone into any of the details surrounding these. It gets kind of complicated. And there's different theories and hypotheses about what actually went down with him. And that maybe he wasn't quite as crazy as people like to put him off as. That other things may have happened. So I guess as we dig into this, we can bring those things up. And people may have heard about these things or not. It was eye-opening to me. And some of it made sense. Some of it I could see during the things that he was dealing with. The mania and things. Mm-hmm.
The official narrative, the widely accepted story of Van Gogh's severed ear, is that during the quarrel that night, Gauguin stormed out of the house. In a fit of madness, Van Gogh grabbed a straight razor and followed, intending his friend harm, and returned home instead. There he used the weapon on himself, slicing off one ear. He wrapped the wound and delivered the appendage to a maid at the town brothel. In the morning, the police had him taken to the hospital. Gauguin subsequently packed his bags and left for Paris. That's a quote from VincentVanGogh.org.
So, yeah, that's, I think, maybe one of the most famous stories or antidotes, so to speak. It's not an antidote, really. But one of the stories that people hear about Vincent, that he was this artist that cut off his ear. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what we know about him. And you see the picture of him in the hat with the bandage over his ear.
Yeah, when I was little, we had in elementary school, like, art days, and they'd, like, focus on different artists. And when they talked about Van Gogh, that was really all they covered. This crazy artist who was so passionate that he cut off his ear, you know, and it was like, okay, they didn't present you with any other information. So that's kind of all like I was exposed to until I got to college, really.
There were other circumstances in his life. Mm-hmm. One of the major theories that I heard of in reading the Van Gogh brothers, it was Vincent and Theo, the Van Gogh brothers was the name of the book. And I listened to it. I didn't read it. It was a book on tape. And in it, it was, and in the movie also of Van Gogh loving Vincent, the recent one that was painted, the whole movie. Basically, it was presented that after the argument that they had, and they had a lot of stormy discussions and arguments, and Vincent was a pretty intense guy. So they... Like you said, they had their argument, Gauguin left, and Vincent followed with this, I think it was a straight razor. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that was offered up is that Gauguin was a fencer and brought his foils with him to think they were in the south of France at the Yellow House. Uh-huh. And so the idea being that perhaps Gauguin sliced off Vincent's ear in an argument or similar, meaning harm or rage. And that Vincent covered for him, you know, so that's...
And that's kind of a, from what I understand, it's kind of a conspiracy through his whole life that he was possibly, you know, I use the word victimized loosely, but victimized, and then he covered for people, you know, along with his death, and I mean, which we'll get into later, but with his ear, with his death, like, if those are true, then it seems like he was really just trying to, like, protect people.
Yeah, and he seemed to be a very kind person. When you hear about a lot of the things through his life, I don't think it's that far out there to think that that's a possibility. Yeah, so I don't know. So as far as the ear goes, that's one of the things that I heard. Nobody says necessarily that it's true. It's just kind of, you know, what if is what they're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
We're taking a break here and we'll talk to you again soon about the theories surrounding Vincent's death. There are some who don't think it was a suicide. Join us for the continued incredible story of Vincent van Gogh. We're glad to have you with us on the Whispering Gallery podcast. Thanks for listening. We feel like we've got a really good community here, and you can find us on Facebook and especially on Instagram, as this is a visually oriented podcast on art, so you can see what we're talking about. Thanks for your patience with the dogs that you might hear from time to time. There are studio dogs. On Emily's side, Weetsy and Sai. On my side, it is Shotzi and Boomer. And if you like the podcast, please like us on Apple Podcasts or whatever app you're using, and I believe that'll help people to find us from what I hear. And it makes sense, as I'm looking for new podcasts. I'm looking for podcasts that are rated well. So we do our best. We are independent, and currently we don't have any advertising or anything going, so it's just pure stories right now. Take care, and we can't wait to talk to you soon.